I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
...16 years old, fatally shot outside a Scarborough apartment building. Tonight, an arrest in the summertime death of Caden Francis. And what we're learning about his accused killer will shock you. Good evening. In just moments, we will hear from Caden's mother, heartbroken and horrified over the loss of her son and the person now charged.
She's a 15-year-old girl facing first-degree murder in the killing of a fellow teenager. CTV's John Musselman is live on Antrim Crescent near Kennedy and the 401 with more. John.
Well, Nathan, by all accounts, Caden Francis was described by family and friends as a great kid, loyal to family and friends, a good student. He was shot on this road here. He died just up on the park there. Ursula Francis says the pain and heartache is overwhelming and never ending.
It hurts. My stomach, I cry at night to go to bed. Sometime morning I wake up, I'm still, you know, that's the first thing is tears coming out my eye as a mom.
Her 16-year-old son, Caden, was murdered just steps from his home near the basketball court where he loved to play with his friends. It's near Kennedy Road, just south of the 401. Francis was a straight-A student with dreams of attending university. It all ended on the night of July 3rd when he was shot to death. He collapsed on the grass where this memorial has been set up.
Played basketball on school, off school, you know, very smart, tech savvy, you know, and sad that he was robbed of such a bright future. It's really sad.
I know my son, he's gone. I have to accept that he's gone, but I know he's living in me.
Today, Toronto police announced that a 15-year-old girl has been arrested and charged with first-degree murder in Caden Francis's death. She cannot be identified under provisions of the Youth Criminal Justice Act. The family says they have been told the girl's name, but they tell CTV News they do not know her.
As a mother, it is very sad, you know, because one day she's going to be a mom too, and she's going to have her own family.
The motive for this murder remains under investigation. The family believes their son was called over to a car parked beside the park, and when Caden approached the vehicle, he was shot at least twice. News of the arrest has the family hopeful that they will get justice for their son.
And as we mentioned, this is an ongoing investigation. Police want to talk to anyone who may have any information or may have witnessed what happened here on July 3rd. Reporting live, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, John. I want to turn next to another family navigating a sudden and shocking loss. A daughter remembering her parents killed in a collision near High Park.
She'd been on the phone with them just moments before the crash. Both of them beloved in the community. CTV's Sean Lethong is live with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, Ashley Avila told me that her parents were pillars of this community of Little Portugal. They owned the building behind me, working downstairs, living upstairs for almost 50 years. Their favorite hobby was to stroll along Dundas and see their friends. And sadly, that all ended on Tuesday.
It's so tough. We were just together on Thanksgiving, and to get this news the day after it's heartbreaking.
Ashley Avila is standing outside her parents' home just 2 days after her mother, Fatima Avila, and her father, Valdemar Avila, were killed in a crash.
Life was cut short for them. They don't get to see my kids grow up anymore. My kids may not even remember because they're so young.
Both parents originally from Portugal, 69-year-old Fatima Avila owned the Salão Leal Salon on Dundas Street West since the mid-70s before shutting it down during COVID.
People waited for her for hours to get their hair done.
71-year-old Valdemar worked as a roofer and had no plans of retiring. The couple were known in the community of Little Portugal. Valdemar, known for his generosity.
If they needed food, he would buy groceries for them. My dad is such a loving soul, and he didn't deserve to die this way.
The couple were sitting in traffic on Parkside Drive around 4:40 on Tuesday afternoon when they were rear-ended by a dark BMW that was driven by a 38-year-old man. The crash started a chain reaction involving five vehicles total. Three other people were sent to hospital. Ashley had spoken to her parents just minutes earlier, talking them through the process of filling a prescription at Costco. That's where the couple was headed on Tuesday.
15 minutes after that conversation, he was gone.
According to police, Valdemar died at the scene. Fatima was pronounced dead in hospital. Police said the driver was traveling at a high rate of speed, but so far, no charges have been laid. And the family had been going to church at St. Helens for years, and the daughter informs me now that now they're planning their funeral there. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Still ahead tonight, a community honors an innocent victim of gun violence, how a 12-year-old boy is being memorialized, and the message from his parents.
Now to the reopening readjustment coming soon to Ontario.
CTV News has learned the next phase in the province's pandemic pivot is imminent. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
And how imminent is going to be the key word here, Nathan? The chief medical officer of health may have diminished a lot of the hopes of restaurant owners. He said today he still wants to examine the data coming out of the Thanksgiving weekend, suggesting it could take 7 to 14 days for some of the pandemic restrictions on restaurants to be relaxed. The intense pressure dished out by the restaurant industry has forced the premier to pivot. The province is now ready to lift physical distancing restrictions for the sectors that have vaccine requirements in place.
That's a good decision of cabinet, and as I said, relying on the best medical advice and scientific advice, and we continue to monitor, so we'll have more to say.
Sources say the Ford government is working on a phased approach to lifting pandemic restrictions. The initial phase would see capacity in bars, restaurants, and gyms return to pre-pandemic numbers. It is possible now, health experts say, because the worst of the fourth wave never emerged.
We're doing rather well. I mean, our hospital system is not overwhelmed with patients suffering from COVID-19. Our daily case count is pretty reasonable. The percent positivity is pretty reasonable.
Here's how the chief medical officer of health is planning the exit. First, he wants to examine the impact of the Thanksgiving long weekend.
The trends are good at present. We still have to wait for the next 7-14 days of what the impact of this long weekend has been.
Then Dr. Moore says he wants to prepare the pandemic exit strategy.
We'll be able to provide guidance to both businesses and to the community at large of when we see from a public health vantage point some of the measures could be removed. We will not be doing this suddenly. This will be slow, gradual, and cautious, following data like we've been doing for the last year and a half.
But CTV News has also learned, as part of this phased approach, the vaccine certificate requirement will eventually be phased out. Beginning next week, businesses will have access to a verifier app that can scan QR codes carrying your vaccination information. While that will be a mainstay over the fall and winter months, sources say as the situation improves, vaccine certificates will eventually be voluntary.
We may not require them in some venues, but still require them in mass gatherings where we have a large number of people gathering.
While the changes are being welcomed by the restaurant industry, critics have their questions.
What's been the holdup? Why did Doug Ford give a gift to the big fish? Well, mom and pops and local businesses have had to wait and are wondering why they got treated differently.
The chief medical officer of health is offering this.
Some of these decisions are made quickly, and I'm sorry if there's been short notice to some.
But serving up no apologies to the beleaguered restaurant industry for keeping the pandemic measures in place. Premier Doug Ford is set to hold a news conference at Queen's Park tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. He'll be talking about the QR code, which is set to take effect on this 22nd of October. And he's also going to be touching on what the government plans to do when it comes to restaurant restrictions. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Nathan, over to you.
All right, thank you, Colin. Ask many business owners and they'll be quick to tell you these changes are long overdue.
But do they come too late for some? Turns out the sense of relief isn't universal. CTV's Austin Delaney is live downtown with that part of the story. Austin.
Well, the restaurant and bar owners, for the most part, that we spoke to today say they welcome the news that they'll be able to serve a full complement of customers again soon. But take a look at the pub behind me, the Black Bull. On a day like this, a nice fall, a warm day, pre-COVID, that patio would be full. It is not. The owner's saying nothing's going to change for him until foot traffic comes back in this city.
How are you? Thanks, how are you?
Ruby Soho Bar and Eatery sits in the heart of Toronto's entertainment district. It has survived COVID, but at times just barely. The lifting of dining restrictions is long overdue, says the owner.
Huge, massive game changer.
Archie Aline says the social distancing restrictions in restaurants have hurt his bottom line.
On any given night, I'm turning away literally hundreds of people because of keeping the distance and social distancing between people. So hundreds of people a night we're turning away. That now maybe we can let in a small fraction of them, which will make a big difference.
On the outer edge of the entertainment district is the Black Bull, one of the city's best known patios, but it is virtually empty.
Last night, like, we shut down at 7 o'clock. We don't have to, there was nobody here.
Rob Taylor says in the 46 years he has owned the pub, that has never happened. Complaining the easing of dining restrictions will do little for him, as long as there is hardly any walking traffic downtown with so many people working from home.
It really won't help. I don't think it will. It doesn't help that much. But it's, you know, it might help some places.
But on the Bulls patio, Alex and Don say it is a matter of fairness.
The Leafs now back, it's kind of a no-brainer, I think, to have full capacity at restaurants and patios.
Restaurateurs have bared the brunt, a disproportionate share of the brunt of pandemic so far, and it's time to actually level the playing field.
When the COVID restrictions ease, gyms are also expected to benefit. A long time coming, says this owner.
Thought it would have been announced last Friday when the announcement was made that a lot of major venues, major concert venues, were going to go to 100% capacity.
Clients argue it is important as the winter months approach and there is less outside activity.
And so the gym owners, the restaurant owners, the bar owners, they all sit tight now and wait for that announcement from Queen's Park. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. And our online team has complete coverage of the province's pandemic response. You can find that information at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
When it comes to vaccinations, more than 87.2% of eligible people in Ontario have received at least one dose. And more than 82.6% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated, representing nearly 10.8 million people.
Coming up, how's it a four-day work week sound? Turns out more businesses are having that discussion. How the pandemic is changing the look and feel of the workforce. Another above-seasonal day, but things are going to change. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle.
Well, Nathan, we've reached a high of 21 degrees, so yes, above-seasonal, feeling like 26, and the Humidex has been a big part of the story, really, right for the last little while. Certainly today, as some communities in southwestern Ontario reach well over 30 with the Humidex. We have the leading edge of a system that's going to continue to be a weather maker for us, starting to lean into southwestern Ontario right now, eyeing some heavier pockets and potentially some thunderstorms for areas like Owen Sound. Around the region, this is how we're doing in terms of temperatures, mostly high teens or low 20s, still feeling like 33 degrees in Sarnia and Essex right now. So it is a muggy out there. Here in the city of Toronto, we are seeing this southwesterly flow of air, and we are dealing with temperatures that are still quite warm, 19 degrees, feeling like 24, 18 overnight, which is very warm, a risk of thunderstorms and showers. I'll tell you more about what you can expect coming up soon. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. He faced deadly risk in Afghanistan as a translator for the Canadian military, but it was in Toronto he was shot dead along with a friend at a nightclub.
The convicted killer now faces a life sentence, and the translator's family is hoping Canada can do more to protect others who risk their lives for this country. CTV's John Woodward reports.
That's Zemurai Khan Mohammed, known as Amir Jamal to his friends in Afghanistan about 10 years ago. He joined up as a translator for the Canadian military out of high school and organized events like these dinners to help Canada's soldiers understand his culture.
That's how he was. You know, he was friends with little kids, with older people, with everybody.
His brother told an Ontario Superior Court hearing Khan Mohammed had survived 5 suicide bomb attacks and the risk of landmines and thought he'd be safe when both of them came to Canada. But he and his friend Tyler McLean were killed after a minor dispute outside a Toronto nightclub escalated into violence. Cocaine dealer Tanade Mohammed took offense after an argument. He threw a water bottle. Khan Mohammed tried to calm everyone down. The court found Mohammed went back to his car to get his gun and watched McLean for nearly 2 minutes, scheming to terrorize him. When he attacked, Khan Mohammed punched him. Mohammed shot him in the head. McLean banged on the door of the car. Mohammed shot him in the chest. For that, Tanade Mohammed has been sentenced to life in prison without parole for 18 years. Justice Peter Bodden said Khan Mohammed had acted to protect soldiers in Afghanistan. His actions were consistent with his character. It was in his nature to endanger himself to protect his friends, something McLean also did moments later. Bodden added, instead of running away, he ran directly towards the danger. That decision cost him his life. It should be recognized for the heroic act of friendship that it was.
My brother, he was a hero, just, you know, a guy who trying to protect his friends and a guy who was trying to make peace between two people.
Khan, also a translator, is worried about showing his face as his family remains in Afghanistan. The Taliban now in control of the country. Some 2,500 Afghans have been welcomed to Canada. About 1,200 are en route, but many remain in hiding or in safe houses. Khan is hoping the Canadians can continue to bring them to safety. Despite everything that's happened to his brother, he still believes Canada is the best place for his family. John Woodward, CTV News.
Turning to a fatal shooting in Scarborough, the gun violence happening in a restaurant parking lot.
The search on for those involved. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
Police tape surrounds the parking lot of a Boston Pizza at Morningside and Milner, the scene of a fatal shooting late last night.
Yeah, that's a regular restaurant for me, and I'm in shock that this type of thing would happen.
It's bad, because I always come here, you know.
Police say they were called to the scene around 11:40 and found a man in his 40s suffering from a gunshot wound. He was transported to a trauma center but would die of his injuries.
That's kind of scary. Feel very bad.
Oh, so sad.
It's not good. There's too many shootings all over the city. It's just too many guns and too many shootings.
It's not like anything new for the city, though. I mean, there's guns everywhere.
Today, the Boston Pizza is closed for business. Police will not say if it was open at the time of the shooting, although its website says the Cinemark Drive location is open until midnight.
At this point, we don't have any suspect information, nor do we have a motive. We do know, however, that homicide detectives have taken over the investigation, and they're asking anyone who may have witnessed anything last night or who may have recorded dash cam video to get in touch as soon as they can. Janice Golding, CTV News.
The Special Investigation Unit is on the case at Toronto Police's 43 Division in Scarborough. It's where a 48-year-old man died while in custody this morning. The cause of death is still unknown.
York police have put a dent in a sophisticated vehicle theft ring. More than $1.5 million worth of vehicles have been recovered and six people arrested. Security video released by investigators shows a couple of these suspected car thieves. The majority of the vehicles were stolen overnight to then be shipped overseas and sold.
The pandemic has changed many things, and for many people, that includes the way we work.
For some, the lines between work life and home life have blurred, and select companies are responding by adjusting employee hours. CTV's Natalie Johnson joins us, and for some, Natalie, today is their Friday.
Yeah, exactly, Michelle. A four-day work week is among the schedule shifts that some companies are considering as employers reevaluate the typical 9-to-5, or at least the Monday to Friday.
It's going to be Monday at 3.
It's TGIT for the staff at the leadership agency recruitment firm.
We should also put our hiring forecast in those numbers as well.
Because Fridays are not part of their work week.
We'll need a conversion of top three.
The company's founder shifted their schedule to Monday to Thursday operations a year ago after seeing her staff burnt out from the pressures of a pandemic.
People were working way harder, much longer hours, finding it way harder to turn that switch off.
She kept their pay and compensation the same, but gave the team every Friday off. The result?
Almost instantly, we noticed our revenue went up, our average deal size, you know, the amount of clients that we were working with, the time it took to be successful with them.
Because you felt like you do have your personal time, you weren't overextended, so you really did want to give 100%, and you felt like you had the emotional bandwidth to do it.
It's a schedule switch that more and more companies are considering in a world where work from home has changed the way employers and employees think about how work works.
The work week hasn't actually been adjusted since the Industrial Revolution. And so with, you know, knowledge workers now being at the forefront of our economy in many ways, it begs the question of what works and what needs to change.
HR software company Humi officially modified its work week to 4.5 days 2 weeks ago after trialing it over the summer. Its longer weekend schedule means operations close at 1 p.m. on Fridays. The firm says both productivity and employee satisfaction are up.
It makes for a very compelling business case.
Is it good for employers and employees? Yes, that's the answer.
Linda Duxbury has studied workforce change and says although a four-day week likely wouldn't work on a large scale, for the companies it does work for, higher productivity can be achieved in fewer hours.
You have to be output-driven, especially when you're managing professionals. It's not about the hours you put in. It's about what, you know, what you produce.
The team at the leadership agency says it's clear a Monday to Thursday schedule is their best bet.
We're never going back to a five-day work week.
Both for their productivity and their people.
That's great.
And experts point out that even when employees are paid the same amount of money to work fewer hours, often the employers benefit from improved employee loyalty and that you can't put a price on that. Reporting live, Natalie Johnson, back to you.
All right, thanks, Natalie. When it comes to the virus situation, Public Health Ontario is logging 417 new cases of COVID-19. 271 were among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 35,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, with the province's positivity rate sitting at 1.2%.
528 more illnesses are considered resolved as that total approaches the 580,000 mark since the start of the pandemic. Three more deaths are linked to the virus and a total of 9,807 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 69 new cases in Toronto and 43 in Peel. There are 30 new cases in Hamilton, with 18 in York Region and 14 in Durham. Halton Region has 11 new cases, with 9 in Niagara.
When you look at the numbers, COVID concerns may be easing here in Ontario, but the pandemic situation is critical in other parts of the country.
Saskatchewan could soon be sending ICU patients to this province as its healthcare system is overwhelmed. CTV's Vanessa Lee has the latest.
In Saskatchewan, the province that currently has the highest COVID-19 death rate in the country, doctors say they are overwhelmed and understaffed. Still, the health minister insists they are managing on their own for now.
If it gets to a point where we have to move people out of province, then we will to be able to maintain that quality of care. And that's why we've been able to work with Ontario, and we're also, our officials have reached out to Manitoba to have those discussions as well.
Help has arrived in Alberta to ease some of the pressure on hospitals hard hit by the crisis. A team of 7 health workers from Newfoundland and Labrador are now in Fort McMurray, allowing that hospital to increase its ICU capacity. Of 652 recent infections, 73% are not fully immunized. The premier says vaccines are mandatory in a number of fields, including the military and healthcare.
To allow staff who have a higher risk of transmission of a potentially lethal disease to their patients not to get vaccinated would, I think, be legally irresponsible.
Quebec has just announced bars and restaurants will be able to operate at full capacity starting November 1st. Normal operating hours will also be allowed, meaning bars can stay open until 3 a.m. Vanessa Lee, CTV News, Montreal.
Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland was in Washington today, and she was asked whether she was concerned the U.S. government didn't treat Canada any differently than Mexico when it came to reopening the land border to visitors.
I think that we need to be respectful of every other country's sovereign decisions around its own borders and of every other country's sovereign right to manage its borders as it sees fit.
Freeland said Canada's partnership with the U.S. remains very effective and close. The American border will reopen sometime next month. Travelers will still need a PCR test to return to Canada.
Several weeks after Canadians went to the polls, we now know when Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is likely to unveil his new cabinet. CTV News has learned the announcement will be made on either October 25th or 26th. Justin Trudeau's Liberals again claim the most seats in the September 20th vote, but not enough to govern without the support of another party. A number of ministers lost their seats, meaning new faces will be included regardless of other potential changes to cabinet.
Canada's top military commander, currently on leave, is speaking to CTV News for the first time on camera about the misconduct allegation that sidelined his career. The investigation ended and no charges were laid, so Admiral Art MacDonald wants his job back.
I have not done anything wrong. I've acted with integrity in response to allegations. I've been exonerated as a result of a rigorous and thorough investigation, and I remain a real champion of culture change. I'm committed to it. And I think that by advocating for my job, what I'm saying is simply that, listen, we can't have a system where allegations alone are sufficient for removing someone.
And you can watch more of that exclusive interview with Admiral Art MacDonald tonight on CTV National News.
Help is arriving in Nunavut as its capital still struggles with a water crisis. A plane from Ottawa carrying about 31,000 liters of clean water has landed in Iqaluit. The city declared a state of emergency and warned residents to stop using tap water after a fuel smell was detected at the treatment plant this week. Lab results aren't expected for another few days, and residents have been scrambling to find other sources of clean water. Municipal trucks are also collecting river water and treating it with chlorine.
Norway's security agency says a deadly bow and arrow attack that claimed several lives appears to have been an act of terrorism. Four women and a man were killed in the attack Wednesday, which started inside a supermarket. Two others, including an off-duty police officer, were also injured. This was Norway's deadliest attack since a mass shooting that killed 77 people in 2011. Residents in Kongsberg today stopped to light candles on the street in memory of the victims. At least six people are dead and dozens more hurt after Lebanon saw its worst sectarian street violence in years. Hours of clashes took place between Hezbollah supporters and other militia groups before the Lebanese army was able to restore calm. Hezbollah had organized a protest to push for the removal of a judge leading the inquiry into last year's deadly blast in the capital. U.S. and French officials say any probe into the explosion that killed over 200 people must remain impartial.
Queen Elizabeth attended the opening of Wales Parliament today with a special thank you to those who've been working hard throughout the pandemic.
We all owe a debt of gratitude to those who have risen so magnificently to the challenges of the last 18 months. From key workers to volunteers.
The Queen said those workers are an example of the Welsh spirit, which she's encountered many times throughout her life. She was joined at the event by the Prince of Wales and Duchess of Cornwall.
The Queen's grandson, meanwhile, is adding his voice to those calling for urgent action on climate change.
I want the things that I've enjoyed, the outdoor life and the sort of nature and the environment, I want that to still be there for not just my children, but everyone else's children. And we, if we're not careful, we're robbing from, you know, our children's future.
Prince William, the second in line for the throne, said time is running out to save the planet from more serious harm. And listen to this. In light of yesterday's space flight, he criticized billionaires spending their fortunes on funding trips to space rather than addressing an environmental emergency here on Earth.
Also tonight, how many Canadians lost their vision last year because of delayed eye exams and treatment? But a new report reveals about how long it's going to take to clear the eye care backlog.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, these days we have lots of options to buy now and pay later. But if you sign up with a payment plan, make sure you have a good understanding of how it works, or an item could cost you three times more than if you paid for it up front. I'll have my report. That's just ahead.
A very warm low of 18 degrees overnight tonight, and not much warmer than that tomorrow, 19 degrees for our high, though that's still above seasonal for this time of the year. Unsettled tonight and tomorrow with showers, but the real rain moves in as we get into Friday night, and it will stay with us through the day on Saturday. In fact, we now have a special weather statement in effect. Some areas will receive 30 to 50 millimeters of rain. There may be rainfall warnings that will be issued. Here in the GTA, probably on the lower end of those things, closer to 30. As this continues to push through on Saturday. I'm going to have more details, including showing you the special weather statement and, of course, your seven-day forecast. Stay with us.
Offers to buy now, pay later sound like a great idea. They allow you to enjoy something right away before it's paid for.
But these offers can come with a lot of fine print. And if you're not careful, a deferred interest plan could cost you a lot of money in the long run. Pat Foran has the eye-opening story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
I do, Michelle and Nathan. Thank you. We've all seen offers where you can get something now and take a year or two to pay for it. But if you miss the promotional period deadline, even by a day, you could have to pay mountains of interest. And some plans are considered revolving loans that never end.
I needed a computer.
Allison lives in Brampton and asked us not to reveal her identity. She says 7 years ago as a student, she needed a laptop but didn't have the money to buy one.
I wasn't able to pay the full cost of the computer at the time, so I was made aware that there were financing options.
Allison says a laptop had a purchase price of $723. She paid $23 per month for 90 months for a total of more than $2,000. She was shocked to find out this year she still owed almost $400 for the computer. She didn't realize she had signed up for a revolving loan and had mainly been paying interest charges.
So I said, how is that even possible? I mean, I've like paid for this computer maybe four times already.
The financing company told CTV News customers that use this revolving credit take advantage of our deferred interest promotions. Most pay off their balance prior to the promotional expiration and thus avoid paying interest.
You're paying interest on top of interest on top of interest.
Patty Lovett-Reed says there are many different financing options. Some offer no interest charges for 12 months to 2 years. But if you don't pay the amount in full by the deadline, you could have to pay up to 30% interest over the entire loan period.
It's often, zero down, no interest, pay a year from now. But a year from now, you know, you just don't know what your financial situation will be. And some find themselves even worse off.
Before agreeing to any deferred payment plan, make sure you have a good understanding of the terms and conditions. Allison didn't and wanted to share her story to warn others.
And if you sign up for a deferred payment plan, make sure you write down the date when the promotional offer ends and always try to pay more than the minimum payment each month, or the item you bought could cost you triple its original selling price. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Today worked out to be another really nice day weather-wise, but we do have that special weather statement in effect.
Yeah, I think we've been spoiled of late. Things are going to change now, Michelle.
Well, certainly, Michelle and Nathan, for those of us, I think the three of us included, that are fans of warmer weather, it's been pretty nice so far this October. We've been trending well above seasonal. Things are going to change as we get into the weekend. But, you know, we have some rain, some cooler temperatures, but it's not going to be so bad next week. We'll take a look at that. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So temperatures today in the 20s, and for some of us, Humidex values in the 30s. We have 25 degrees in Windsor right now, feeling like 33 degrees, and we're after 6 o'clock in the middle of October. So it has definitely been a warm one. And we're looking at an overnight low tonight of 18, so just a degree less than we are right now, which is well above seasonal. But the interesting thing is we're going to kind of stay quite steady near this temperature for the next 24 to 36 hours, and then the temperature will start to drop during the day on Saturday, and I'm going to show you why. We have the risk of showers with some thunderstorms as we get through the evening and the overnight. Thunderstorms potentially until after midnight. And we're going to be unsettled during the day today. Could see more thunderstorms, or tomorrow, I should say, could see more thunderstorms in southwestern Ontario. And I'm certainly eyeing areas of southwestern Ontario, the Grey Bruce Peninsula, Muskoka, for some more active weather. Here's the special weather statement, extending all the way really into Quebec, 30 to 50 millimeters of rain Friday night in through Saturday with a system that is moving in. And it's going to be an interesting one. What we're actually looking at is the remnants of what was Hurricane Pamela. It caused some flooding as it moved across from Mexico into Texas. And now it is headed towards us, joining up with another low. It's going to be quite moisture laden. And this is how things work out. So the leading edge of the cold front causing us some showers tonight and potentially some thunderstorms. Then the low moves in, and then another low moves in and it brings us the rainfall. So as we get into tomorrow, this is how things look in the morning. More rain to the southwest of us. And then we get the rain really moving in the evening. As you can see, we get another round of it later on and then another one during the day on Saturday. And it's going to be quite unsettled throughout the day. And then the temperature will drop during the day. So 19 tomorrow, 17 with the temperature dropping on Saturday with 30 to 50 millimeters of rain. Sunday, 13 and showers much cooler, rebounding a little bit for the rest of the 7-day, and we do get some sunshine. Back to you, Nathan.
All right, thanks, Michelle. It's a pain that will never go away for the family of Dante Andreata Mariquin, the loss of a child in the most tragic of circumstances.
Killed by a stray bullet while grocery shopping with his mother, the 12-year-old now being honored by his community. Here's CTV's Beth McDonnell.
At Dante Andreata Mariquin's former Brampton school, a special tribute has been unveiled. This bench honors Dante's life, a happy boy who loves sports, video games, and his friends. In grade 8, just 12 years old, when almost 1 year ago, he was hit by a stray bullet walking in North York with his mother.
And I'm grateful for the school to do this in honor of my son, because he was an innocent child who shouldn't have gone to this. Time passes, but the pain doesn't.
I know we will never forget him. I know you want to. He's with you in your hearts, in your minds, every day.
The principal says the sudden and tragic loss at the school has been hard. The bench and space, a tribute to the friend he was, with the hope it will spawn new friendships.
Because that's what we remembered him as, that true friend that was always there for us.
Braden Charlton, one of Dante's best friends.
A great friend, very funny, just brightened up everyone's mood. I didn't believe it at first. I thought it was like some type of sick joke, but I found out afterwards that it wasn't a joke. It seems like a piece of me is still missing every day.
Three men have been charged with first-degree murder in connection with Dante's death. None of them are out on bail, and preliminary court proceedings are set to start in February of next year. As the November 7th anniversary of the shooting approaches, police say their thoughts are with the family and encourage anyone with information who has still not spoken with investigators to do so. The date and what lies ahead weighs on Dante's parents.
And all I ask is for justice for my son, because this should never happen.
Like his friends. And we're going to miss him.
A family and community brokenhearted, trying to move forward, keeping Dante's memory and friendship alive. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
Also tonight, virtual care doesn't always cut it. Why Ontario's top doctor is urging physicians to start seeing patients the old way, in person. The COVID-19 pandemic has taken a toll on so many aspects of our lives, but what about your eyes?
On this World Sight Day, a new report is taking a closer look at vision loss and blindness across Canada. Our health reporter Pauline Chan has more.
Doug Earle from Fighting Blindness Canada says the figures from the study shocked even him.
Almost 3 million Canadians did not get a regular eye exam, visit optometry services in the country, which means that they weren't getting early diagnosed.
In fact, the report shows 1,437 Canadians lost their vision during 2020 due to delayed eye exams and treatment. 335,000 fewer eye surgeries were done in March to June of 2020, a decrease of 47%. And the estimate is that it will take 2 years to catch up with a backlog of eye care, requiring an additional $129 million in funding.
And in fact, eye surgeries was identified by CIHI as being the number one surgery impacted by COVID.
I know that there has been a lot of cases where people have suffered and have lost vision because they haven't been able to get in or they've been scared to come in. Patients have been hesitant, and it is feeling much more relaxed since everyone has been getting their vaccines.
Ian White had a hard time getting to his eye specialists early in the pandemic.
I was born with congenital glaucoma.
His vision was restored and he lived sighted for decades, but other complications developed and he lost his eyesight again at 40. His message on World Sight Day?
I think it's a day that should be more widely promoted to make people aware that eye health is really critical. Losing your vision is one of the most devastating things that can happen. It impacts every aspect of your life.
Pauline Chan, CTV News.
And here in Ontario, optometrists have withdrawn eye services covered by OHIP, including exams for children and seniors, amid a funding dispute with the government. There's no word on when a possible resolution might be achieved.
Health officials in this province are urging doctors to resume in-person visits and to cut back on virtual appointments. A joint letter signed by Dr. Kieran Moore and other health officials was sent to 45,000 doctors saying it's time to resume normal activities as the pressures of the pandemic ease on the healthcare system. It also cited complaints from patients over a lack of in-person appointments and an increasing burden on emergency departments from patients seeking face-to-face care.
Comedian Howie Mandel is sharing a positive update after he suffered a medical incident. The America's Got Talent judge reportedly collapsed yesterday morning at a Starbucks in Los Angeles. He was taken to a nearby hospital and has since tweeted, "I am home and doing better. I was dehydrated and had low blood sugar. I appreciate the great doctors and nurses that took such good care of me. Thank you to everyone who reached out, but I am doing okay."
Jonah Hill is receiving an outpouring of support online after speaking out about body shaming. The actor has previously opened up about his challenges with body positivity. He took to Instagram to clarify that references to his size make him uncomfortable, even if fans think they may be complimenting him. He wrote on his page, "I know you mean well, but I kindly ask that you do not comment on my body, good or bad. I want to politely let you know it's not helpful and doesn't feel good. Much respect."
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
I have to accept that he's gone, but I know he's living in me.
Updating our top stories, an arrest has been made in the killing of 16-year-old Caden Francis. He was shot dead in July, just steps from his Scarborough home. A 15-year-old girl is charged with first-degree murder as the motive remains under investigation.
Life was cut short for them. They don't get to see my kids grow up anymore.
Another family's facing a sudden and painful loss. Fatima and Valdemar Avila were killed in a crash on Tuesday near High Park. They were rear-ended by a driver police say was traveling at a high rate of speed. But so far, no charges have been laid.
We will do this cautiously, slowly, monitoring data.
And capacity limits could soon be lifted for more business sectors with vaccine requirements. Health experts say the step is possible because COVID-19 trends remain positive. Officials say they're waiting to see the impacts of Thanksgiving gatherings before moving forward.
On the mark is the Canadian dollar was up 41 basis points to 80.79 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 87 cents a barrel to close at 81.31. And the TSX Composite Index gained 201 points to close at 20,819.
Purolator is beefing up its workforce as it prepares for what could be a record holiday season. The shipping company plans to hire 2,400 new employees and increasing its fleet. Purolator expects those workers will handle 54 million packages over November and December, 10% more than last year. As all delivery companies prepare for the surge in demand, Purolator says it will also set up new pickup locations and expand its parcel sorting capabilities.
Meanwhile, Swedish furniture giant IKEA is sharing a bleak outlook for the retail industry with Bloomberg. The company's CEO says shortages from the supply chain crisis could remain an issue throughout the middle of next year. Shortages of transport containers and blocked up ports have snarled logistics, slowed sales growth, and increased costs for stores. IKEA is trying alternative methods to get products shipped to stores, but the whole supply infrastructure is facing a major challenge.
To a crisis now capturing national attention, the water situation in Iqaluit.
CB24 Tonight is digging deeper this evening. We're joined by Jackie Crandles and Jennifer Shung. Jackie, you'll be speaking with the city's mayor.
Yeah, 80,000 liters of water arrived from Ottawa today. Some help for the 8,000 residents of Iqaluit who have been without water, at least since Tuesday. That's when the state of emergency was declared. Suspected contaminated water fuel in the city's water source. So we'll be speaking with the city's mayor to find out what the very latest is there. And to a volunteer who's been loading up big tanks of water from a nearby river and distributing it to those who are vulnerable in the community.
And Jennifer, you'll also be hearing from a BC woman who had a close call with a meteorite.
Oh, right, Michelle. Imagine just waking up in the middle of the night to discover that a meteorite had crashed through your ceiling, landed on your bed just inches away from where your head was sleeping a moment ago, and surviving to tell the tale. Well, we'll be speaking to Ruth Hamilton about this, as well as geophysicist Phil McClosland, about the rarity of something like this happening. It's a 1 in 4 trillion chance.
Wow. That person should buy a lottery ticket. All right, Jennifer, Jackie, thank you so much. And CP24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
I'm Zoraida Allman. Coming up, a 15-year-old girl is facing a first-degree murder charge in the shooting death of another teen, the latest on the investigation. Plus, mapping out the province's plans to lift pandemic restrictions tonight at 11:30.
William Shatner can now say he's boldly gone where few others have gone before.
The Star Trek actor was a passenger on the Blue Origin launch yesterday, and now that he's back down on Earth, he said simulations were nothing compared to the real thing.
You can talk about weightlessness all you want, but the feeling of weightlessness, the actual feeling of weightlessness, is indescribable. First of all, your guts, your body doesn't have any pressure, so suddenly your body's expanding. Secondly, you're floating, and I don't want to turn somersaults. I don't want to throw Skittles. I want to look out the window.
Shatner says the experience wasn't an easy one as a 90-year-old man, but it gave him a new perspective on just how fragile the Earth is.
Love that story. How are things on this planet, on the ground?
A little unsettled tonight, Nathan. We do have the risk of seeing some showers and thunderstorms this evening, and this is just a bit of an appetizer for what's happening as we get late in the day tomorrow. 18 overnight tonight, 19 as we get into our high tomorrow, and we are looking at staying close to that temperature in through Saturday. Heavier rain moving in Friday night through Saturday for us. There is a special weather statement in effect, and temperatures will be dropping during the day on Saturday, eventually at 8 degrees overnight, so single-digit lows. And then we are cool for Sunday with 13 degrees, rebounding a little bit, still looking nice as we get into next week. Back to you.
All right. Thanks, Michelle. Be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us at CTV News, have a good night.